Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Welcome. Our guests are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News and Matthew Felling of Channel 11 News. Steve, the mayor of Anchorage, Mr. Sullivan, unveils the budget for next year. What's in it and what kind of sacrifices are people going to make?
Yeah, there's going to be some sacrificing, that's for sure. Especially if you ride the bus, you may not have as many options as you do this year. The budget is about $31 million higher than the current year's budget. There's going to be a modest increase in property taxes for people who own homes, property, things like that. And it's still about $10 million, I believe, under the tax cap. One of the things that the mayor told us was that this is a budget that will see more money, but most of that money won't go to services. Instead, it's going to go to salaries and benefits. Some of the consequences, though, are we're going to see about 8 fewer police officers under this budget proposal. There are going to be a number of apparatus for the fire department, equipment for the fire department that's going to be mothballed. They won't have the rolling blackouts. That was a little too cumbersome, what we saw a year or so ago.
And unpopular.
So there are going to be some trucks that maybe aren't used very often. Those are going to be mothballed, so that's going to save the city some money. And again, the bus routes. There's going to be fewer buses on some of the routes, and there's some routes will be eliminated altogether. Now, this, of course, has to go before the Anchorage Assembly.
And how do we anticipate the Assembly is going to receive this?
Well, there's already some posturing. You've heard some things. There's going to be attempts, obviously, to add back service. There are a lot of people who depend on that bus to go to get to their jobs, to get groceries, whatever. And you're going to see some folks who are going to push back on the mayor on that one. And he knows that's going to happen. So whether or not he can talk him into keeping things where they're at, that remains.
And how long do we expect the budget debate will continue, or where will it end? When will it end?
There's a defined date, and I also used to think it was in December at some point.
Yes. It has to be in place when January 1 kicks off.
Right, and I want to say like December 15th, middle part of December. That is when that's the deadline for setting this. So you'll see a lot of public hearings. You'll see a lot of debate in front of the Assembly. People have an opportunity to go and sound off on this, or go and support it too as well, and that'll be in the coming weeks.
Like a game show contestant, I'll take the first part of the question first, and I'll take the second part. With the bus lines, yes, they're going to be diminished in frequency, was the code word, but not only that, he's also going to bump up the fee, so you're going to end up paying a little bit more for a bus that you have to show up 30 minutes later or 30 minutes earlier for. I asked him.
I'm not going to make you mad once. I'm going to make you mad twice.
Exactly. Yeah. Just get to work a little bit early.
Illustrates the point, too, Matthew, is that the people mover budget is actually going up $200,000 under this budget. But again, it's going to go mostly for fees and or for wages and benefits on this. And to make up the rest of that, as you were saying.
Yeah, bump up.
Matthew,
the
we can't stay away from it for long.
Oh, no, wait. I'm not done talking about the budget yet.
Then do that. We got to get
We are going to lose 8 police officers or 12, depending on whether we get grant money in, which everybody presumes we do, but we can't plan on it. We can't expect it. Those police officers are not going to come off the front lines, apparently. They're going to assign detectives. They're going to drop them back down to street officers. So the people on the street, according to City Hall, will not be affected. But there's a lot of consternation inside the policemen's union saying, listen, these are specialized people. They have been at a desk for a while. They know one thing very well, and we might be taking them away from their specialty. And the mayor says, well, they used to be cops. They can be cops again. And we'll have a lot of conversations with the Assembly.
Okay, we can't stay away from it for long. The U.S. Senate race, which is the biggest news story of this election season. The three major candidates met for the first time before a Native group to discuss Native issues in South Anchorage on Thursday. What did we learn from that? What did we see?
Well, we learned what we're seeing with this week in terms of the Senate race. It's, to borrow the ADN's, up, down, either way. Murkowski's doing this these days. And McAdams is is blipping upward. And Miller, with regards to unemployment, with regards to whether people should have the right to vote for their U.S. senators, or repealing...
That's the 17th Amendment.
17th Amendment, pardon me. Which
nobody thought about till very recently.
I know. Thank you for bringing the Constitution back into relevance, the 17th Amendment. We'll talk about prohibition next week, perhaps. But no, Murkowski got to point out the fact that she could name all these villages that she had spent the night in. She could talk, you know, line and verse of all the money.
There's my old friend out there, so.
Precisely. And I got stuck on the sandbar outside of Bethel when I was coming up the river. And McAdams, of course, could stress that he was a small town mayor, a big guy from a small town. And he could also always stress the fact that he knows everybody in Southeast Alaska. And then Joe Miller's response to where have you crashed at? Where have you spent the night in rural Alaska? He was a little bit less forthcoming. He said, check out my website, joemiller.us. You'll see all the places I've been to. He has less familiarity with non-rail belt populace than probably the other two candidates. That's fair to say. Mm-hmm. He didn't struggle, though. I mean, he was able to stick to his points about federal spending. And then I actually got him in the corner afterwards, and I said, listen, what is Alaska going to look like without earmarks? And, of course, McAdams and Murkowski say, oh, that we're going to go backwards fast.
Actually good at giving a rational presentation of the problem that they face with federal spending and the 8A contracting. Maybe they didn't like the answer, but he was able to present himself well.
Yeah, I mean, he was being blunt. He was being honest. And the people seemed receptive, and the people seemed to understand what he was getting at, whether that will translate to votes, whether they are willing to swallow that pill to different...
He'd been presented as somebody who was going to show up there with horns and a pitchfork.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Steve McDonald, what did you get out of the debate?
Well, I think you've got a different Lisa Murkowski is what you've got nowadays, I think. I think that's probably the biggest part of this whole thing. She seemed to kind of waltz through that primary, and it cost her. I think she's much more aggressive, a much different candidate. Yesterday was kind of almost in her home turf. And certainly with that audience, that she was most comfortable with the group of folks who were accumulated there to see that particular debate. So I think that's what I've seen. I've seen a much different Lisa Murkowski, much more focused, much more aggressive in this go-around for the general. She's got to be. She has no choice.
Matthew, you want to add anything here before we move on?
Yeah, at the same time, though, there is aggressive... Mm-hmm. And then there's aggressive for Lisa Murkowski, which is two separate standards. And I think that Lisa did come out swinging a little bit yesterday. She said, listen, why is it when we talk about, you know, sanitation, when we talk about water supply, people down there call it pork. We call it infrastructure. And she really got, you know, to come out of the box swinging on that one. And she said, listen, if we're going to start restricting federal spending, if we're going to cut back on the way we fund things, let's start with the lower 48. They had the Industrial Revolution. We haven't had that yet. We should take what's ours and keep it. It was a very sound talking point. And it was one of the few times where she actually raised her voice and spoke with a little bit more fever. She was very deliberate for the most part, but she made all the points she wanted to.
Okay, I want to step down from the podium for just a second to become a panelist and tell you that on Monday, I went to the Tea Party press conference, Tea Party Express press conference, where they unveiled their new round of ads. It was quite an interesting experience. You had this sort of aura of patriotism and high diction and appeal to the best of American tradition.
High diction?
Yes, they
really?
Sang the... we sang the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
We did the Pledge of Allegiance, and the singing the national anthem was led by this pint-sized young woman who had a voice that could fill
the
metronome.
Did they have a
fight? No, it wasn't quite that, but they did have the flag.
Yeah.
And then a Gold Star mother came forward and talked about her son, who she's done this before. I've seen her on several times, who had been killed in Iraq. He's the first Navy SEAL to die in Iraq, and what his blood sacrifice meant to the American people, and how we need to appreciate that, and how vital our freedoms are. Then Amy Kramer, the head of the Tea Party Express, who's from the Sacramento area, I gather, came up and talked about how we need to control federal spending, we need to reduce the budget, we need to return to constitutional principles, we need to elect Joe Miller. And the rest of the whole meeting was devoted to trashing Lisa Murkowski in a kind of way that, you know, was just as rough and tumble and in your face and had nothing to do with any sort of high principles or anything else except
so the high diction was lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, Kyle Hopkins of the Daily News had a real good point. There's just a kind of like a jigsaw puzzle that doesn't quite fit together. On the one hand, there are all these high principles that are invoked, and on the other hand, the political operation of winning the election is just like any other campaign. And many of the people, mm-hmm. young people you meet there, they just worked on Republican campaigns, and now they're working on this campaign. There's no difference to them.
And not only do they have that jigsaw puzzle mentality, they also have that talking point where they say, listen, Lisa's going to attack us. Lisa's going to say we're extremists. When you don't have any stances, when you don't have any beliefs, of course you're going to attack. By the way, let's show you our ad where we attack.
Well,
attack,
where they make Lisa look terrible, and I had written a version of this and for a column I wrote in which I talked, they made her look like a hag, and the editor said, no, you really don't want to say that. I said, okay, then they make her look terrible. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So we agreed on terrible. Okay, this week Alaskans were exposed to a debate over the minimum wage and the 17th Amendment. Steve, how did these issues suddenly become center on the center of the plate through constitutional conservatism?
Yeah, who knew that would be part of this whole event? And out of it came the line of the campaign when Scott McAdams, a Democrat, who everybody seems to forget about this, that he's running in this race, came out and said that Joe Miller wants to repeal the 20th century. I think that's the line of the campaign so far.
That's what Miller's going to have to live with anyway.
That's true. That really was just a brilliant line on McAdams' part. But yeah, the 17th Amendment basically spells out how the country elects its senators. It used to be state legislators that appointed or elected U.S. senators to Congress. And the 17th Amendment came along and gave that right to the American people. And in an event in Fairbanks a week or so ago, Joe Miller's quoted as saying he'd like to see that repealed and that put back into the hands of the
state legislature. Which is pretty strange in one sense, I think we can say fairly. Well, it's the people who elected him or nominated him, not the legislature.
Yeah, especially when you think about the priority of issues facing the state of Alaska and this country. Is that really up there? I mean, when you've got energy issues and you've got banking issues and you've got financial problems.
Housing.
And, yeah, so let's repeal the 17th Amendment. So, so this is what's come out of it. And his opponents, obviously, have really made some hay with this. Lisa Murkowski seized on it right away. It appears that some of the people in the Miller camp have kind of backpedaled on it and just like, okay, let's just kind of ignore that comment. This is what he really meant, that kind of thing. But yeah, it was one of those moments where, it's blood in the water and the opposition season.
Let's get Matthew. Matthew, first of all, your assessment. And second, what do you make about Joe Miller's wife receiving unemployment compensation after he'd raised this as something that wasn't so great, at least from a federal perspective?
Well, the key problem for the Miller campaign this week is that Scott McAdams was saying it lightly. If you want to stop with amendments to the Constitution, you're not just doing away with the 20th century, you're doing away with the 19th century as well. Anything beyond the Bill of Rights is up for fair game. Suffrage, abolition of slavery. I mean, that's the can of worms that he opened up this week by saying, I don't believe in a living, breathing Constitution, which is a solid, legitimate point of view to have. But at the same time, that opens up a lot of questions, especially for Alaskans, especially our relationship to the Constitution, our suspicions of it, but also our belief that we are moving
forward. Well, this goes back to what Steve was saying. Most of the time, politicians are promising a chicken in every pot. Mm-hmm. We're all going to get a job. Now, to Joe Miller's credit, he did do some of that at that summit.
He did say, you know what I'm going to do for rural Alaska? I'm going to do three things. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't really explain how exactly he was going to do that, but he did say, listen, there's
economic. The tradition,
and he did say that we're going to loosen regulations on resource development so that you guys can have a better handle on things out there. And that did seem to resonate out there. With regards to his wife and unemployment and working as a clerk when he was a magistrate in Tok, it was a further step along that road of him being against things and then seemingly to have in the past benefited from the things that he is now standing against, be it unemployment, be it federal farm subsidies.
Well, and he's forced to explain these things rather than explain what he's going to do for you as a voter.
And I'm glad that we haven't even gotten to the fact that he sent an email to somebody, or he received an email from a certain first dude.
That's a whole other story, but we'll get to that. Steve, I'm sort of wondering here. I'm going to change the script a little bit.
Yeah.
I've heard a certain amount of criticism of the media suggesting that all the things that are being talked about with Joe Miller now should have been vetted during the primary, and the Alaska media didn't take it seriously enough and didn't dig hard enough. Or neither did the Murkowski campaign, and maybe more importantly, they should have been digging.
I agree with all of that. I really do. We didn't do our job in the primary, and that goes for Channel 2. That goes for everybody in the media. I don't think the reason why it seems like a feeding frenzy right now is because we're all doing our jobs. Lisa Murkowski and her camp, believed in her poll numbers and felt she was 20, 30 points.
And some of the rest of the suckers, me, for example, believe.
Oh, hey, I'm right there with you, brother. You know, we debated about having a debate. We said, why have it? We'll just concentrate on the governor's race. And so we did concentrate on the governor's race. And we thought we should have something on the Senate. No, it's... This is all coming out now because I think everybody's doing their job now, finally. And oh yeah, I'm right there. If people want to blame the media, I'm there. And it's, I think this is why, this is probably maybe why Joe Miller is having a difficult time dealing with us right now, because it's all of a sudden it's there, it's in his face, and I certainly can't speak for the Miller camp, but you know, it's all of a sudden it's very intense, and the white hot spotlight is on him. He didn't see this at all in the primary, and had we done our jobs, maybe we would have even have done a favor for Joe Miller. This would have come out in drips and drabs a little bit, and he would have been beyond it.
Now, fellas, when I made up the budget for this show, or what we're going to talk about,
topics. We already talked about the mini budget. What do you
say? No, that's right.
I know.
Joe Miller had not filled out his conflict of interest statement fully, or it hadn't been revealed at that time. Now we have it. Either one of you want to tell us, do we learn anything from it that's of import?
Go ahead, Matt.
There's a little bit more meat at that bone for people who are not fans of the Miller campaign to pick at, because here is a man who preaches fiscal conservatism, and he's got $115,000 in credit card debt.
I don't know if it's that high, but it's high.
It's in the six-figure territory.
Well, it could be I guess there are two ways to look at that. One is, if you have eight children, you're running up expenses all the time. The other might be, I'm wondering if he's putting some of his campaign expenses on his credit card.
It's very possible. It's absolutely possible. I mean, he loaned himself a lot of money for his own campaign, and we are going to start trying to figure out how exactly that money was diverted. And I will share the blame in not covering Joe Miller as aggressively as perhaps we should have. I did a profile of him back in June. It was interesting, to say the least. And then, but I also have to say that his campaign was a little bit less, collaborative.
Well, and then when he won the election, they were lining up the Washington Post, LA Times, New York Times, Raw, CBS, CNN.
I'll say right now, I had an interview set up with him for a certain day. It was the day that the Don Young corruption charges were dropped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I, of course, I spoke with Don Young, and I had to say, listen, to the Miller campaign, listen, I know I needed to reschedule. Can we do this tomorrow morning? First thing, you will be first thing on my list. And they said, on a Friday, that's unacceptable to us. So, at least in terms of where I was.
What's special about Friday? I don't quite get that.
Nor do I. I just know that they were in town, but they didn't think that a Friday placement.
He's been doing a lot of the national shows, the national TV shows, Sean Hannity, all those shows.
Greta.
We were joking that he was going to become a paid member of the KTUU staff, because he's been in our building sometimes two and three times a day doing live shots out of our basement.
For all the national stuff.
So, yeah. So, well, a couple of weeks ago you asked, accessible to the media? And had to say, yeah. Because we knew he was in the building, because everybody would say, he's in the building. We'd go down and wait in the hallway, come out of the room.
Miller has left the building.
Yeah,
Steve, Scott McAdams, the Democrat, is trying to present himself as the rational alternative to the squabbling over here in the Republican Party.
Yeah, he's doing well.
Is it working?
Well, I think he's got the best media. I know what your opinion is of his spots. His spots are great. The Hulk tie. I know he's getting a little heat from, that's Ted Stevens thing, but the Hulk tie is great.
Swearing in Norwegian.
Oh, just good stuff. I mean, a perfect kind of ad that you want to introduce yourself to the populace. Let's face it, he does not have name recognition out of Southeast Alaska, maybe out of Sitka, outside of Sitka. But folks out here, we really don't know that much about him. So I think he did a really good job of introducing himself in his first media spot. And then the second spot is that, we used to have a senator, holds up who did this, holds up the Hulk tie. So I think he's doing a really good job. He's got to make sure, though, and this is a trap we've laid for ourselves. There's a couple of times where people go, the Miller-Murkowski race, wait, there's a third guy in there. Remember the McAdams guy, So he's got to get in there a little bit more, maybe mix it up somewhat. But he's doing a good job, I think, I'm above the fray. Let these two guys go.
Matt, as a pro, you want to comment on the TV advertising?
Well, I mean, they are pitch perfect. I mean, they're fun, they're cute.
Yeah.
I mean,
Need more, don't you?
You do need more, but not as a first step necessarily.
Right.
I mean, you have to establish your presence. You have to establish your identity first, and I think that these are great ads. And I mean, not only on TV, but also even on things like Twitter. He's, you know, Joe Miller's talking about measuring rooms and painting walls in D.C. And McAdams for Senate says, they're glad you're having a good time in D.C. Joe, I'm all about Alaska. I mean, he's just pushing that hard. And McAdams, what his number one challenge right now is everything he does, everything he says about himself is in, I am not like Lisa because, I'm not like Joe because. He needs to establish who he is. I mean, even when he and I have conversations, I'll ask him like a simple EPA, or I'll ask him a simple, you know, federal this, that, or the other. And he says, well, unlike Joe and unlike Lisa. And I was like, no, Scott, Mayor McAdams, what do you think about it? I mean, I'm not trying to do press for him, but he has to establish who he is, not who he isn't.
A Fairbanks story very briefly. Chuck Reese, who ran for mayor of Fairbanks many years ago and was a very big man, ran with the slogan, the big man for the big job. McAdams has a nice slogan too, right? It's all about Alaska. Has been pretty nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, we better move on to the governor's race. Matthew, how are the boys doing in the governor's race?
We're speaking of ads. We're seeing a lot of Ethan Berkowitz ads. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing anything from the Parnell campaign, and I think Parnell is running a stealth campaign. I mean, he is running.
Everybody knows who I am.
Everybody knows who I am. I'm the governor. Just before we came in for this shooting, I just went in to him at. Launching a public health initiative. I mean, he's just being a governor, and he's getting coverage
free
that
media.
Way. Free media, mm-hmm. Except for the man who sometimes sits in that seat, Paul Jenkins. He's not that big of a fan of what he's been doing or not doing. And Ethan Berkowitz, God bless him. I mean, his press people are saying, listen, we are trying to engage with him, and he will not talk to us. And I think that they are stuck at one level, and Parnell is sitting on top of 50%, and he seems content to stay there.
Yeah, which he did in the primary. He stayed out of the way, stayed in the foxhole, didn't present a target. That's what frustrated Ralph Samuels and Bill Walker to no end.
Hi, I'm Sean Parnell. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Come and debate. No, he wouldn't. And which is a smart thing.
Well, he
thing
did
for,
some. I mean, he did.
Yeah. Oh, much as yeah, he did. Yeah. He did the biggies. But you don't want to present too big of a target when you're the incumbent, when you're ahead, I should say, too, because you're the one with the real track record. So,
Matthew, let's turn to Congressman Don Young, who you've interviewed recently. Tell us about how things go with the congressman.
Well, I've spoken with Congressman Don Young. I do the weekly Alaska's View from the Hill with Murkowski and Begich and Don Young. Don Young, when he can get up here, we sit down together, and you know, it's been some time. We established a rapport, so we had about four or five conversations.
He knows what to expect from you, and that you're a pro.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Carrick.
I'm speaking for Don Young.
Can I put that on my business card around
yes,
the restaurant?
Yes, you can.
I think
put it as Don Young said.
Ooh, I'll leave that one alone. But no, so we sat down, and it was kind of like a parent having that conversation with your teenager. It was about time to have that talk with Don Young, especially with the corruption charges dropped against him with regards to his earmarking back in August. And I finally got to say, listen, in the middle of the conversation, just listen, it's been a while. I know that you couldn't talk about ongoing investigations, but what happened with Coconut Road? And he said, there was never anything there. There was never, how can I talk about something that never existed? How can I talk about something that was just rumor and innuendo? How can I talk about something? I don't know what to do. And I said, well, some people would say that that had more to do with the prosecutors than it had to do with you. And he's like, I didn't do that. That has nothing to do with me. And so we talked about it. We talked around it for a while, but it's very clear that he just feels completely vindicated. And there's nothing. There's
it
nothing
seems
there
to me. I also have to ask. It almost seems like Harry Crawford, the Democratic challenger, has disappeared.
I'm sorry. Who?
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, he's Claude Rains. He's the invisible man, and there's a lot of fodder out there for him, but he's not seizing any opportunities. He's just sitting there. I mean,
well, he probably doesn't have any money. That's probably what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Okay, Steve, you don't run the business at KTUU, but I'm thinking, do you have an opinion on this or knowledge of this? Are we going to see more? Are we seeing more television advertising this year because of the entrance of outside third party groups or third party independent interest groups, or do we know?
I don't know. I don't really know that part of it. I stay out of the sales part of it. But we've had third-party groups involved in races before. We had a lot of third-party groups, PACs, and things like that came up in the Murkowski-Knowles Senate race 6 years ago. We had quite a few third-party groups who came in and aired ads up here. So this isn't really anything new. It's just new because we have the Tea Party Express involved, and we haven't really seen the Tea Party movement up here in Alaska to this degree. So but we have seen certainly other third parties right. come in here and run ads.
Yeah, but on behalf of both television people here at this desk, as much as they are about fiscal restraint, we are seeing a stimulus plan, a stimulus bill for our very selves at the
stations. Well, and you get these third-party groups,
exactly.
citizens who are concerned about a good future.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break.
And I do think, I'm not sure if the volume is there, but I think that the opportunities and the avenues are open because of this Citizens United ruling from the Supreme Court.
Well, the point is, we all see, I mean, TV stations and radio stations and newspapers live for election season, right? So we all see that big uptick in terms of ads and things like that. Whether this is more than we've ever seen in the past.
Yeah, well, the problem is your people rely on their memories and nobody really goes back and researches it.
This seems like the most intense, the most intrusive.
Because
the
I'm
most
involved.
Kind of.
Now we have about 30 seconds. Shell's talking about resuming drilling in 2011 in the Arctic Oceans. What do you expect?
I think that Shell is going for a smaller version, a mini-me version of what they wanted to do up in the Beaufort for next summer. But the challenges that they're going to have is we haven't finally closed the book on what happened in the Gulf of Mexico. And before the White House and before America, the federal government moves forward, I think they have to figure out what happened down there. And Shell has put billions up there, and they're still sort of in limbo.
We have to move forward. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week right here on Anchorage Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.